Okay, now I call them. Thank you. check behind you when I came through.
Honourable members, can I propose that we start? Welcome everybody to our meeting. We are dealing with the little one today, the foundation for our education. I don't know if we have any items under personalia I want to share. Of that, I didn't feel your blood. Do we have any items under personalia? Okay. No news, good news. Special welcome to the department. We are going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Mayor.
Maybe even before that, I should say what I understand now, our deal has come to the ATC, the National Qualification Framework Bill. And I think that is likely to affect our program because we need to prioritize. It may be sooner or than later, as a committee who agree, we'll have to have our briefing by the department on the bill so that we can start putting it in our program for everything that follows. We'll start the hearing in 4 months, 4 months to agree to that. I thought I should ask that and draw your attention to that. This came out yesterday at 86. Yes,
thank you, Chair, and on that, I will be looking forward to working with the portfolio committee in steering that legislation through Parliament. I think you will see there has about the little ones, the ECD. But before we go on, let me introduce the team I've got today. The 10-year-old Smith, the Chief Director of Curriculum Assessment in our Branch G. Mari Louise Samuels, he's Director in Charge of ECD. And then Ms. Dorothy Lasipa, she's a Director in our Financial Planning Unit. And she will talk a little bit about some of the funding issues in relation to ECD. So, Jen, we've got a three-part presentation. We will start with, and maybe we should start by clarifying, I think there has been, in many cases, a continual question about what is meant by ECD. And I think, just to put it very simply for us here, we see this as being comprised of two components. One is the grade R work that we do, the five-year-olds, and the year of preschooling. That's a huge component that largely Ms. Samuels will take responsibility for and deal with. And then the other part of it is what we call the integrated plan for ECD, the program that deals with the 0 to 4 year olds. So when we just understand it in those two ways, obviously a very different logic and system that we work on there, but we'll explain it as we go through. So as I say, Chair, the first part, we will deal with the grade R, in particular, the preschool year and what's happening on that one. Then we'll talk a little bit, if we may, Mr. Mazipa will deal with the funding of that grade R program in our schools and what's happening in that regard. And then we'll invite the families, with your agreement, Chair, to talk about the integrated plan for the 0 to 4 year olds. So that's the framework, Chair. I believe that there has been a presentation sent. I trust members have got it. There might be one or two little tweaks we've made over the past day or so, but broadly it's there, Chair. But if I can ask Ms. Rolfsmith then to commence.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to just start with the overview, which is a general picture, and as you said, then my colleagues will be speaking. We started in White Paper 5, which gives us the mandate for ECD. And the White Paper 5 talks very specifically about the grade R, as we've mentioned, and then the preschool, the 0 to 4, where we're responsible for the stimulation, the educational services, where as the Department of Social Development is responsible for the registration of their sites. And then I'm going to look at the progress to date and then the challenges that we are experiencing and managing, I think, and then we'll look at the next step. Right. So, Education White Paper 5, the one on early childhood development, was called Meeting the Challenge of Early Childhood Development in South Africa, and it really was the acknowledgement that if you want to get education right, you need to get it right from the beginning. And that was an early acknowledgement, and I think around the world you find that they're starting to all acknowledge that's the starting place for excellence in education. When we developed the white paper, the challenges in 2000 was the fragmented legislative and policy process for ECD. It was all over the place, and the white paper was intended to bring them together. We found that there was very, very limited access to ECD services, often for privileged people only. There were inequalities in existing ECD provisioning because redresses of the past had not yet been addressed at that stage. And the quality of ECD was incredibly variable because we didn't have it as a regulated sector. It depended where you were, what kind of quality you experienced. So White Paper 5 made a commitment in terms of grade R, that we would have universal access to grade R by 2010, with the majority of young people being in public primary schools. So in other words, they weren't all committed to go to a public school in a grade R class attached to it. We accepted right from the beginning that there would be independent sites and that we would monitor them and make sure that our policy there. The funding would come through grant and aid from provincial departments of education, and it would be paid to the school governing bodies. And then thirdly, the grants would flow on a per-learner basis to encourage a focus on efficiency of provision. And this is the way in which we're funding and for ECD funding. That has been the funding for ECD. We're trying to improve the funding because your quality is very heavily dependent on funding, obviously. Right, the commitment was also that the subsidy bears the approximate percentage of the cost of a primary school learner, a supreme cost of about 70%. So in other words, if a grade 1 learner uses a 100% cost, you bring it down to 70% for grade R. So it is slightly cheaper to offer grade R than it is to offer grade 1. The curriculum, it's been an ongoing development curriculum for this reception year. It's linked to the national curriculum statement, and the grade R must prepare you to go into the national curriculum statement in grade 1. And it gives the provision of a more effective support to ECD practitioners to improve their teaching practices. We found that many of the ECD practitioners had simply cared for the children. It is now important to ensure that they also educate them. The White Paper 6 looks at the development of governance models for incorporation of publicly subsidized community-based ECD sites in the public system for the reception. So this is the acceptance that you don't have to be at a public school. If there's a community-based site close to you, you're welcome to attend that, and we will ensure that you get quality education. And there is an indication in the White Paper about the governance model. Then it also looks at the review and amendment of all the relevant policies, the norms and standards, legislation and regulations. And we will talk in a shortly, Dorothy will talk to you about the norms and standards for grade R that we just published. The commitment talks to the development and implementation of pre-reception year programs. They name the 0 to 4 year old ECD program. The end of age 4, so basically it's the 0 to 5. Those are your pre-reception years. Your reception year is your 5-year-old and your 6th grade. The development of an appropriate curriculum for pre-reception year programs was a priority when we looked at the white paper, because there wasn't an appropriate curriculum that everybody was implementing. And the curriculum in this case simply means a plan for learning via play, etc. It's not the same as a formal kind of curriculum that you have. You don't teach children from textbook, but there must be a plan as to how you're going to develop their learning. Then it looks at expanding work on practitioner development and career partners for reception year practitioners and pre-reception year practitioners. And these are probably some of our most unfortunate educators. Really not well paid, not well trained. So we've been focused on the training and the development. But since the white paper, we've had sufficient years to make some progress, so we'd like to give you some idea of the progress we've made since then. We're looking at universal access to grade R by 2010, with the majority of learners being in public primary schools, but also acknowledging that there would be some heterogeneity in the site. We've given here the figures in 2004, and you can see the total for the country. I'm not too sure if you have the same time.
I don't think we
have the total. I think I added the total. Yeah. And the total in 2004 was 356,000. But if you look at the total in 2007, we're on 487,000. So there's been a significant increase, but you will see since then we've had a significant increase in funding, and therefore we expect that this acceleration of learners entering grade R is going to be really improved. In addition to the 487,000 that we indicated here, there are at least 200,000 in the community-based site. They weren't on our database, but we are looking at Lewis, which will capture all of our learners, so we'll all be able to get exact figures. But at the moment, 2007, there was an estimated 687,000 learners in grade R, which is getting towards our target. We believe that we should be able to make our target of 990,000 by 2007. Right, then if we look at the percentage of the target, and you will find that some provinces, and quite nicely, some of the provinces that seem to struggle in some areas, even take a 75% of the target, which is really very helpful. I think the provinces that are lower are able to make up their business more easily, And there has been a commitment this year that they are going to move to the universal access. So in total, we're saying that about just under 50% of our learners in higher grade art school that we expect to have by 2010. Add to that the 200,000 in community based sites. And so by 2010, we will definitely have the majority in our school. And we're hoping that the total number will equal that 990,000. But the growth rate in terms of budget, and I think you can see between 2006-2007 that there was a really significant increase in the budget in the majority of provinces. A couple of provinces that hadn't made an increase at that stage, but they've since amended their situation. So the jump from 683,000 to 983,000 growth of 44%. A growth of 44% shows the seriousness with which the provinces are addressing the access. And then if you look at the funding from 2008-09 in this MCS, you can see a huge growth. And this has been a commitment of the additional funding that we have received to ensure access. And I think the funding is going to open the door for all of the children. The curriculum. We have a basic package of equipment that's been developed to indicate to practitioners exactly what equipment they need, what kind of program they should follow. It includes both indoors and outdoors equipment and program. And the funding that I've just indicated in the previous slide will, amongst other things, go to ensuring that that equipment is purchased for the challenges. We know that in grade R, a lot of the learners do experience through play, and so equipment is an important thing. The other focus in grade R is the training of the grade R practitioners. As I've mentioned, they are not qualified at the same level as our teachers from grade 1 upwards, and therefore there's a significant attention being paid to training of grade R practitioners. We're upgrading their qualifications, which generally is around about NQS level 4 on the NQS level framework, up to an NQS level 5. Training is happening, with ECT colleges and other countries and NGOs are offering it. Limpopo has made a decision, and they really go for quality wherever they can. They've made a decision that they want a minimum of NQS level 6 for the year and grade on teachers, which is really nice to see. And they're working towards that. So it means that the better qualifications, we should have better quality teaching in the class. But it also means that the teachers can be paid with the best of them that were in the class. Then it's also improving the quality itself, and this is absolutely critical because all of the research will show you that you've got to use these years pre-grade one to ensure that the learners are ready to access learning in grade one. And so there's support material, particularly for practitioners, written for these specifically for the project in the classroom. There are practical ideas, booklets that show and tell the teacher exactly what they should do. We've developed posters in all 11 languages. We just have them in poster show because translation sometimes is difficult when you're using unusual terms or new terms. But those posters will go out to all of our sites. The standards for the Grade R program have been developed and they are being used in the identification of model classes. Now, the Minister asked us to identify model classes so that if somebody was working on a Grade R class or developing a Grade R class or teaching a Grade R class, they would be able to go to a model class and say, ah, this is the way it should be. And so we've identified 103 classes across the country, all 9 provinces. They are examples of good practice. Some of them indicate excellent practice in one particular area, some of them just generally good practice. What we are doing at the moment is we are taking photographs and writing up, and we will publish a booklet with all of these 103 classes in I've been with the distribution of the booklet. So all great art teachers can see, and then they will be able to go and visit the nearest class. But also for other people who want to monitor our great art classes and say, are they doing a good job? This booklet, which indicates what is best practice, photographs, stories, and the names and venues of the class, will ensure that we're all able to share that information. And I think it's quite an exciting thing. And the teachers who've been named, whose classes have been named, are really excited about it. And whether the provinces have promised us that we'll have another 100 model grade R classes ready by next year, that we could please do another publicity brochure with that. So I think it's about getting the message out and making sure people understand the shift from the old, simply taking care of children to stimulating their development, both in terms of motor skills and conceptual development. There are, of course, some challenges. It's really exciting, and I think the challenges show that we are pushing the quality grade art. Otherwise, we wouldn't have challenges. It would just be an easy rollout of whatever was there. I think that one of the challenges has been the uneven implementation across the provinces. It's a challenge that we've addressed both in the MCS funding, that all provinces have received this additional funding, additional to the baseline that they had for grade R. We have met with the CFOs, we've met with the heads of ECD to make sure that they are putting the money into ECD and to make sure that they are going to be spending it so that you get both increase in the number of learners who are able to access grade R and the quality of grade R. So I think we're working hard on that. We're also working through his conversations with the support of the highest learners as well. Possibly one of our challenges is the lack of assistance to pay practitioners and to upgrade the qualifications. If I can look at the payment of practitioners, we had an incident in Kaupin for recently that we had to address. And the manual system for paying practitioners in this day and age is really not good enough. Because you find people get paid late, don't get paid on time, don't get sufficient payment, and we have addressed that. We're looking at different systems. We did have a look at tax dollars as a possibility. But we think of the national system, we must address it, and we must ensure that everybody looks up, does get paid, and gets paid on time. The upgrading of qualifications, we've done a lot of work on that. One was to work with SACWA and make sure that the unit standards degree with them so that the latest requirements for being a good grade R teacher and ECD teachers included in those qualifications. There is funding to upgrade qualifications, and I think a lot of our practitioners seem to do that. They really seem to improve what they have. There are still some teachers who have a full teacher qualification, who really feel those, because we've brought in a whole new cohort of people who are teaching grade R. Lack of accurate data is another issue that's been hampering us because we're not always 100% sure of all of the figures. But of course, the newest accurate system, which I'm sure you know about, which will capture the data of every single learner, has included grade R. Particularly, you have to be able to make informed based decisions. And so they will be capturing all of the grade R data for us. We'll be able to the accurate figures as we go through. And then the level of funding being different across provinces. We're very grateful for the additional funding that we got from the MCS budget. It really made a huge difference. It showed provinces and DGs and MCs that there was a true commitment to ECB and grade R provision. And that was really wonderful. What we have battled is to make sure that every province gave sufficient of the money that came into the provincial treasury, that they gave it to ECB, and that of course is spent on ECB. But I think we have addressed this quite openly up front about the need to put the money where the intended go. And everyone is committed to the 2010 Access. We've looked at project management as being a way in which we can manage what happens. It's a large amount of money. And so there is some time to do the national department for a project manager, and we are working with the treasury sector communications unit, but we've got project managers both in the national and in the provincial, so, at provincial level, so that we ensure that we do spend the money efficiently. We are conducting an audit of all the practitioners to determine the level of qualification of each and every practitioner and the salaries received, because it is not the first stage to put across all provinces. And once we have that data, then we'll be able to So I think this audit is really important for us to be able to have a full understanding of the sector. And then the implementation of the norms and standards for funding grade R begins in January 2009, and that is the gazette that I think has been handed out to you, and Dorothy will be addressing that. So I'm going to ask Dorothy to deal with the norms. She is from the Financial Planning Directorate. She is the director there. And
yes, we're working on it.
That document we are following now.
I'm talking to the funding one.
To this one?
Yeah.
Oh, I want us to. I'm sure. Thank you. This one? This one?
Well, she's going to come back to the side.
I'm referring to the budget before I go into the presentation. Because
yes.
My presentation is just to give you in terms of where we are preparing for the implementation period.
Yes. I'm deliberately asking so that I can look where you are going.
Mm-hmm.
I should know where you are referring to.
Right.
So that I know which document you are referring to. So you are trying, you are referring to this document already now, before
mm-hmm.
you got home.
That's right.
Oh, I see.
Yes, I was saying that there's a list of activities that in our implementation in plan, which is informed by our funding norms. For us to plan for this implementation next year, the National Department of Education has got to do other tasks. The CDD is also expected to do other tasks. So one of the critical tasks that we expect from the CED is for them to make sure that our schools are well informed, well in advance in terms of their level of funding that they will get for next year, so that they can be able to plan for implementation coming in 2009. So that information we expect it to be communicated by end of September this year to the schools. And maybe also just to mention what Jenny also touched on, the 70% expenditure per learner that is recommended by the norm. But in terms of rolling out, it is also further recommended that in the early years of the rollout, CEDs can also go to a lower level of funding, but not less than 60%, but it can be increased as they register. And the, yeah, that is the basis. Let me now go into that. Yeah, the presentation, like I said, it will only tell us where we are in terms of our implementing activities and what is expected from our provinces in order for us to meet the target of SDGs. The norms were published in January 2018, and we have an implementation plan that is drawn up by the National Department shared with the provinces, and it has been approved by our EDCOM on the 17th of March 2008. And we have also completed quite a few tasks as identified in the norm that we need to provide our provinces with the rollout tool for them to plan the rollout of the implementation, and also our assessment readiness questionnaire, which we will use to assess how ready our provinces are in terms of implementation, is also finalized, and we also have a communication strategy in place, which is also awaiting implementation in the coming months. Progress to date is we have already provided our provinces with the criteria for registration of community-based ECD sites as independent schools, and that took place in May, and we expect them to start amending their own criteria that they have been using. We have also provided them with guidelines for posting the basic minimum package of grade R input, and we have also provided our PEDs with a template and guidelines in terms of how they need to draw their implementation plan. Those were some of the urgent and critical issues that were identified, and some of them, the first two, we have already done those. The next step now is to finalize this. Actually, it's being finalized now, this advocacy strategy, and we plan to implement that around July, August. And the PEDs, we expect them to also adapt their resource targeting needs in terms of placing the learners in the schools that are proper. In terms of way forward, like I have just mentioned, we expect PEDs to amend their registration criteria, and we expect them to have done that by end July. We are also expecting to have assessed the readiness of our provinces by August. And we also expect CEDs to determine their learner cost intent in order for them to be able to provide the schools with their learner allocations by end of September. And they must also determine the coverage of their per school in terms of coverage of spaces of grade R and ECD. Way forward, also we are expecting PEDs to formulate their MTF budget for this year, and that should happen by end of August. Provide schools with their allocation letters, as I just mentioned now, by September. They must also develop training manuals. Actually, we develop training manuals, and we are planning to acquire the services of a service provider. But our role here will be to train the provinces. And during our training, it will be very clear to them that it is now their responsibility to take it down to the district levels and to the schools in terms of implementing this funding. There are also some risks that we have identified there if things don't go according to plan. The non-adherence to the implementation plan could lead to quite a number of challenges there. CEDs not being able to implement in January 2009, and schools and community-based sites not being able to finalize their budget and enrollment for 2009 time full year, who's not receiving funds on time and not able to procure the early teacher support materials and other materials that are necessary for the learning, impact negatively also on the 2010 target, but that is the target for full implementation, the universal access. Thank you.
Thanks, Dorothy. Let's ask Ms. Samuel then to finish up with the multi-core integration.
Maybe just as an introduction to say that, you know, within the National Integrated Plan, there are basically two components, the one being Torekana Kobano, which is our program of integrated service delivery targeting poor and vulnerable children. And then the second component is the Expanded Public Works Program, where we are providing job opportunities for practitioners that are working in registered ECD sites. And while they are in training, they receive a stipend from the Department of Education. In addition, ECD has been identified as one of the apex priorities of government, and so there's a much bigger drive at the moment to increase access to services, even to the 0-4 age group. Some of the progress that has been made to date is that the Department of Education and Social Development, within the context of the National Integrated Plan, has set joint targets related to registration and subsidization of sites, and that is the responsibility of the Department of Social Development. We in the Department of Education take responsibility for the training of practitioners as well as the payment of stipends, as I indicated. And we are also responsible for the early learning stimulation of the children that are either in the centres or in homes or in other forms of provision. At the moment, lots of our effort and resources are going into the centre-based models. However, the majority of children in the 0-4 age group are not in centres and would probably not need to be in centres, but we need to ensure that the package of services reaches them, even if they're in their homes. Every child needs to be immunized, every child needs to be stimulated, and it's our responsibility to provide guidance in those areas. The Department of Health is responsible for the all of the health-related services, and currently they are the biggest provider of services for ECD, as you know, approximately 90% of those children go through the health system. And none of the other departments can have those kind of targets at the moment. At the moment, there are 11,707 sites that have been registered, and the Department of Social Development intends registering an additional 1,700 this year. In terms of the two focus areas for the Department of Education, which is the training and the simulation program, with regard to training, our target last year was 9,000 practitioners in training. We were only able to reach 8,525 practitioners. The challenge, however, is always whether, in fact, we get the right information in relation to the training, and hence the point that Jenny made earlier about making sure that we develop a system that will be able to track those that are in training as well as those that have exited the training, so that we know where they've gone to after they've been trained. In addition to the training of practitioners, in collaboration with the Department of Labour, we were also in the provinces training and participating in student programs for cooks and gardeners that work within the ECD centres. Again, the registered ECD centres. One of the biggest challenges about those programs was that they were not accredited, and they really are not accredited skills programs for cooks and gardeners. With respect to the early stimulation program, the Department of Education has been involved with a number of other countries in the development of what is called early learning and development standards. These early learning and development standards provide a framework for the development of programs, the development of training programs, the development of curricula for young children. In the early learning development standards that we have developed, we have identified three broad age groups, the one being babies and the other toddlers and then young children. And within each of those categories of children, there are a number of expectations that we have identified that would be able to cut across all of the what is traditionally called domains of child development, which is your physical, your cognitive, your social, your emotional, your perceptual, etc. These early learning development standards are currently being validated so that we can ensure that the content of the of these standards are appropriate to South Africa, and then once it starts being implemented, we will track that implementation in order to ascertain that the age appropriateness of the standards is correct. And so the validation process is an ongoing one. These early learning development standards could then be used in a range of different ways, and one of it is the development of programs for children, but also it could be programs for parents, etc. What we have embarked on is a set of 10 booklets for parents, cutting across 10 different themes, and these booklets will be made available to parents, and particularly new parents, so that they could be further supported in terms of the support that they provide for their children. We also have a training track that has been finalized, and this would entail would enable training organizations to assist in training both practitioners and parents in terms of the early learning development standards and how best to stimulate their children within the different contexts. We have received additional budget for the National Integrated Plan, and in education we had initially requested 821 million. We received 647 million, and so the implications of that is that we have to reduce the amount of training that we have. The reduction was due to two main factors, one being that in some provinces they did not allocate the full amount to the provincial Department of Education, and in other instances the Department of Education, the provincial Department of Education didn't allocate the full amount to the ECD program. So we lost money from the national process. Our target for 2008-09 is that we will be training just under 4,000 practitioners in addition to the practitioners that are currently in training and have as yet not finished their qualifications. And the amounts range from, in KwaZulu-Natal, there will be over 800 people in training to, you know, the small province of Northern Cape with just over 101 practitioners. The second component that we are embarking on is to provide direct support to the provinces, and we, in this financial year, are supporting three provinces in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal, and particularly in the rural areas, to support at least 3,000 families. And the main focus of that support will be to create an environment of reading within the home. So the focus is rural areas. It will be working directly with families, and it will be targeting particularly low literacy environments. And we know that this will be one of the strategies that will be able to assist in the longer term in relation to the literacy strategy. The preliminary budget that have been allocated for the next MTS range from 18 million in the first year to 511 million. Now this is a significant increase over zero budget that we generally had in education. And even last year, not all of the provinces allocated a budget for the integrated plan in the Department of Education. But this year, we can say that at least for the next 3 years, we have secured budgets for the integrated plan, and we know that this will drive up our particular program in a significant way. And hopefully that it would have the intended outcome, which is that the result in the schooling system is better. Our next step will be to work and we are working in a very direct manner with provinces in order for us both to finalize the targets as well as the implementation plan. And just to remind you earlier, Jenny had indicated that we are working on getting project management support, and that project management support is both for the Grade R as well as for the pre-Grade R program. And the next big step is really strengthening of partnerships with other departments, but also stakeholder groups, and particularly, you know, some of the more the big donor organizations that really we have not been engaging with in the past. But we intend doing that in a much more focused manner in this particular financial year.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I think that's the presentation completed. Obviously, with my questions, if I can just make two comments to end with. One, I just trust in this latter part of the presentation, people understand the critical importance of getting these sites registered. Once the site is community-based, I thought, once it's registered, two things happen. One is that the subsidy kicks in from the Department of Social Development. Clearly critical. Obviously, with that subsidy go a number of quality requirements, so in a sense they start to get the quality controls that go with that, but I don't believe in that, to get that. But secondly, of course, the education and health services then also kick in once that site is registered. So really, I think if there's any appeal we want to make here, it would really be vulnerable members if they're aware of any community-based site offering ETD 294, please ensure that they are registered. Please ensure, therefore, that they're getting the subsidy, they're getting those kinds of services coming through. That really is it. Chair, just in conclusion, for your information, a little article from the UK newspapers last week. Children as young as 2 years old are now being given literacy worksheets to fill in as nurseries come under pressure to meet government targets on reading and writing. The move is driven by a new toddlers curriculum, which is mandatory for all nurseries and playgroups. It will check children against, and I know people have been critical of our curriculum, but listen to this, it will check children against 500 development milestones and 69 learning goals before they get to age 5. So at age 2, they're now doing worksheets to see whether in fact they're literate. Now, fortunately, Chair, we haven't gone down that route. As was said, North U4 is a simulation, it's a play period. Clearly, the age 5, the grade R, starts to be a little more formal. But I think if there's any sense here that we are thrusting children into a real formal education program too early, I don't think you're doing any kind of favor with that. So we'll leave you the article. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you ever so much. I'm sure this is an eye-opener to some of us. Let me say that's one experience before we move on. I have somebody who had a registered Educare at Nama. I got all the documentation for this lady with the promise of getting her first payment in the 1st of April 2007. It is now May. I got the certificate, everything that goes with that. Something coming from social development is what's speaking now in May. That lady has not received a cent. And these are some of the realities on the ground while we are trying to do some all of these things. To me, it's good again. I have been under the impression that education is all involved from grade R up. Below that, it is social development. Now I'm learning that even in that area, it is the department that is responsible for the stipends and things. Members, open. That demonstration.
Thank you very much. I thank the department for the presentation. Community based in an hour or two. Just a few very short and simple questions. With regard to campaign 5, there's 98 of modern classes, 103 classes identified across all 9 provinces. Now I come from the 50, and I would like to know where they are in the system. On 56, I had a question based on the lack of systems. Okay, but I think problems with the going to be a response to that. And on page 8, so that's also related, risk to consider 1, 2, 3. I think the third bullet there, one of the risks is schools not receiving funds on time. You know, it's also referred to what you say. But who would be responsible for this? It is already anticipated that it is going to happen. Can you respond in terms of how you can actually make this not to happen? And then the last one is on page 10. The fact that you know provinces fail to allocate enough funds. How can this be overcome? Thank you.
Madam Chair, and that's the point. And then the parents that we need to sign.
thank you.
Thank you, I also to thank the teachers for the last presentation. With me, Prof, I would like to tell you the more educated about all this. Because we've got so many churches outside there, and in these churches we've got children from 0 to 4, and even their 5 years old. So how are we going to work this out to ensure that the 0 to 4 are relevant things? And then also to check with the great arts which are already in some of the, and then are taught by qualified educators, what's going to happen to it. And also to check who is training this practice and why. Thank you.
Samaranga.
Yeah, Chair, I was interested particularly in terms of the progress we have made to wipe out the huge disparities that there were, when we started in 1994 between early childhood in the formerly disadvantaged communities as opposed to the former Model C education communities. I did, the team did give us some tables which are on page 4. I was particularly looking at the table in the middle of that page, how we're meeting our targets. And I don't know if I'm reading this table correctly, but perhaps there's some guidance on it. That your traditionally rural and your traditionally less resourced provinces have a higher percentage of the target than your traditionally better resourced provinces, like Gauteng and Western Cape. Is that correct? Can you just, in your response, explain that to me? I thought that perhaps the converse of that may be the case. But as I say, perhaps I'm reading the table wrong. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, you can.
Chair, thank you, and I'm sure I'll be supported by the team, but thanks for those questions. Let me just say, Chair, for the specific case you mentioned, we obviously need those details. We'll follow up and deal with that particular instance, but if it is a symptom of a broader problem, that you've alerted it to us. I think, Chair, a number of them have picked up on this question, also about mushrooming sites and that sort of thing. You know, Department of Social Development was initially very strict about registering sites, and they were insisting that the site had all the quality measures in terms of the facility, did it have the materials, did it have a qualified teacher, etc. And unless they met those criteria, they could not register, they could not collect a subsidy, they were not eligible for the training and other things that were provided. Now, in a long discussion with them, Chair, we have finally convinced them that, in a sense, they have to reverse that process. That the first task is to get a site registered, because then the subsidy starts to flow, and with the use of that subsidy, you can start to then improve the facilities, etc., etc., the training we're seeking, etc. Now, that, I think you would understand, Chair, is a very delicate balance. It is a dialectic almost there. Which comes first? Do you register them and then help them to meet those quality standards? Or do you say, no, we're not going to register you until you've met these things, when the fact is that it might be 10 years, in fact, before they meet those quality standards? Are you saying, until then, we're not interested in you, we're not helping you, we're not touching you? So, Chair, we've encouraged, as I say, social development to be a lot more supportive and developmental. Not that you just accept any site that comes up, now suddenly you must get the subsidy. But certainly we have said to them, we need to be more supportive. If a site comes to you and says, look, we want to register,
and we clearly intend within a short while, and we'll specify that, to move towards your target, then we're saying ideally, register that site, at least get it on your books, you know it's there, you know the children are there, start getting the subsidy flowing, and if need be, say to them, in a year or 2 years, we want to come back and check that you've you know, done these things, etc. So, in a way, it's I suppose, trying to deal with that that delicate balance, and on the one hand, watching out that we don't just get a mushrooming of sites, as you say, which just become, in a sense, not cash colleges, but cash ETD centers, as it were. That's not the intention. But also, I think we have to agree that where there is a genuine site, that Gorgo in some rural area who's trying her best to do something, but hasn't yet met the standard, I think you would agree it's wrong to say to her, no, we're not going to talk to you until you actually reach the standard. So I think that's what we're trying to deal with, Chair. I don't know whether your case comes into that sort of context at all, but it might be that we have part of that in play. Chair, on the Honourable Masala's question, the list of the model transfers, certainly we can put, and as Jenny has said, we're actually going to prepare a little booklet on that. So it becomes quite an advocacy tool as well, and I think it's quite good. The payment systems that you asked about, you know, the adult you presented, but perhaps didn't fully get the importance of this. We have put out two models for the payment of teachers. Either the school can get a lump sum in cash of the money, and from that money, they then use that to employ individual teachers, and they negotiate the salaries, etc., for that ECD teacher. They do the payments, and they manage everything in the sense around that ECD centre. The other model says, no, let the province give you a teacher. We'll take that off what you would have got in cash, and then you can have the balance to buy your books and materials and posters and other things. Now, the one paper you'll recall actually favoured very strongly the first model. That was where the 70% subsidy figure came in, that we distribute the money, and you guys run it, you find the local teacher, and you negotiate what you pay them, etc. In fact, since that white paper, I think all the provinces have leaned very strongly towards the other version, which is to say, let's have these teachers on our staff establishment, as we do for grade 1, 2, etc. teachers, let's also provide a teacher for grade R, and all we give them, like we do with schools, is in fact that non-personal, non-capital amount to spend there. So the payment difficulties that Jenny was then referring to would come with that first model where the school gets the lump sum, but then the school has to make arrangements to pay that teacher. That's where the manual side comes in and causes difficulties. Schools which have put those staff onto Purcell, oh, it's the Nigerian prison. We're not dealing with foreigners. It's where schools get that subsidy that's the complication. Where the teachers are on the personal system, it's that paid as either teachers are paid, etc. So I think, as I say, although the white paper favours a particular model, I think we've moved on so far from that time, particularly in terms of now the budgets we're getting for the sector, that the same thing, let's just put them on to personal, let's pay them like any other teacher. The question about receiving funds on time. We put it here as a risk because our experience is, even with our current independent schools, not the grade R's, the higher up levels as well, all of them tell us that although the norms and standards say by a certain date, independent school should receive a subsidy, if it's getting a subsidy, every year the independent schools come to us around this time of year and say, oh, we've got our subsidies in this province or that province or that province. So, you know, it's an ongoing task. We have to work with the provinces, but it will be the same kind of issue here. And I think the only thing we want to say is if a school does not get a subsidy on time, again, the call centre, phone the call centre, lodge a complaint, Dorothy will pick it up, find out what's happened without the payment, with the payment. Clearly, it's a provincial thing that they have to do, but we would certainly follow up and try and find out why the payments might not be enough. That really would be our best one. The allocation of funds, I think, is a similar kind of issue. It's something we just have to monitor. In the end, we don't have control over provincial budgets. We don't have control over provincial education budget, so it's going to be that some are going to take a little bit from this program and put it into that point, some will take from here, put it there. In a sense, care is no different from the differentials we have at school level. We spend different amounts per child at school, depending on which province you live in, and I'm afraid we see people from the same syndrome. That's the nature of our system, regrettably. Chair, on the mushrooming side, as I say, I think on the one hand, clearly we must guard against that uncontrolled mushrooming and certainly if it's just collective custody. At the same time, Honourable Machani, we don't want to stop development in this area, you know, where there are genuine people who, you know, the state, I won't say can't provide, maybe can't provide at the moment. So therefore, for genuine cases of people who want to set up community-based sites, we really must not say to them, no, we're not interested in you. So again, finding that balance between supporting those who are genuine and want to do the site without hopefully falling into the case of just supporting our cash things in some way. Chair, Honourable Bonamo asked about the ready. He first said we're doing some good work, and I trust you'll say that in the house of the whole at some stage. The question about the readiness of sites, I think there was an issue there about the assessment, but in all honesty, we would have to say that many of our sites are certainly not ideal. The Minister herself has spoken a number of times about the inadequacy, too often, sadly, in the school. They allocate all the other classes, and then they look around and say, well, what have we got left? Okay, that's the grade R classroom. Now, generally, it's not the preferred classroom, let's be honest. And the Minister has always said, a grade R classroom without a carpet is not a grade R classroom. That's 90% of the work is done on the floor. You must have that. A grade R classroom without pictures around the wall is not a grade R classroom. So I can certainly not claim that all our classrooms are in that sort of condition, but I think that's that basic pact that we've spoken about in saying this is what you need, and until that is there, well, again, if you can't stand until it's there, you shouldn't be doing this thing, but you should be getting this in certainly as soon as possible. The provincial variations, as I say, are something that we live with. It's our particular organisation of education, and you're going to find those differentials regrettably. The criteria for funding are certainly spelled out in the norms and standards, so I think the basis is there. But again, as I said, provinces will all take their decisions about what to allocate to UTV. Chair, the issue of this private school on this public premises is very worrying, I think, and we need to look into that particular case. Generally, we do not favour such arrangements. I think that would be true to say, so we need to find out. But again, you know, I don't want the effect of our decision then to kill the grade R facility. If it is indeed providing a service to people, let's rather see how we can bring it into the ordinary running of the school, that they receive their normal subsidy, and anything else beyond that, I think, would be a problem. So we will look into that if you can just let us have those details. It's not correct. And certainly, of course, once it becomes part of the normal school, then all the exemption facilities, the rights to schooling, etc., would apply. That would be different in the private context. So we would certainly look into that. The cranialism, I think, we would use the term now, these would be community-based sites rather than cranial, but, it's hard sometimes to tell the difference. Yeah, a creche really, I suppose, would be understood as just a sort of safe place where children were maybe kept while their parents were at work. We would hope that an ECD centre is much more than just a safe place. It should be a safe, it should be stimulating, it should be that kind of facility. So I think it's our task to try and work with them and make them into better institutions. Ideally, the five-year-olds, as you said, should be moving into grade R classes, but again, let's be careful. Are we sure that there is, in fact, an available grade R class in that area? You know, these are young children. You can't expect to travel any sort of distance, so it might be in some circumstances that you would, in fact, leave the five-year-old in that community-based site, but again, trying to make sure that they get in the sort of preparation they will need before they move into grade one. The training of practitioners, perhaps you can talk to about there. Honourable Panayeva, in fact, you're absolutely right. It's one of the few occasions where you can, I think, refer to the poorer rural provinces who've actually done a lot more work around these areas and, in fact, are achieving much higher enrollment rates than the urban provinces. The only caution we need to make there, of course, is that both Gauteng and Western Cape have a very high proportion of private ECD institutions. So in Gauteng, your enrollment in public sites is relatively low, but you do know that many of those children are in fact attending private ECD facilities. So in a sense, your overall participation is still quite high, but they would not be in public ECD centres. So I think that might be the explanation why both of Gauteng and Western Cape are seen to be low, but I must say hugely encouraged by both Eastern Cape and Limpopo, and the and not just the work they're doing, but the resources they're investing in the sector. I'm sure we'll see the difference over the next few years. Thank you, Chair. So, Jenny, can you say?
Yeah, and maybe just to elaborate on the point that the DG has made, particularly around the two provinces, the principle in Waitakere 5 was one of reducing the imbalances of the cost. And the majority of the provinces chose the low-cost models that were identified. And where they didn't choose the low-cost models in those two provinces, it meant then that there was a lower access for children. And there was less numbers. And so in the Western Cape, for example, the majority of children within both the public and the independent are actually in your quintile 4 and 5 and not your quintile 1, 2 and 3. So it is worrying when you do an analysis of the access per quintile. It does reflect a problem. In terms of the training of practitioners, all of the training that was received by the practitioners is by accredited institutions. And so they need to be accredited training providers, and they are accredited with the PTPT CISA. And if they are offering the level 4 qualification, they further need to be registered with the department as a private FET provider. And so all of the agencies that are working in this area in terms of training are accredited. I think that in the same way we will provide the House with the details of the model type, we might also need to provide you with the details of the training in terms of where the training is provided and how to access training, because that is always a big question asked by people.
And then the question of fully qualified educators in grade R, those are still retained and they're paid according to their qualifications. So they are not being the provinces to pay in that. So if you've got an REQV qualification and you teach in grade R, you do get paid for that qualification.
Biggest worry, you know, government education at all levels. And as we see this, that we need to cater to find different provinces. What support has the department given to provinces to make sure that districts do have the capacity, not only to implement, but to monitor the state, so that we've got more or less similar critical outcomes. Because the whole idea is to promote children. And one is to think that one of the key implementation areas will be a debt at this district to give the necessary support, because one is think also that there will be plenty of these centers. More or less as many as there are primary schools.
Can I also just clear my mind here? About this payment of the thing, you said there are two models.
Yeah.
You give money to the school, they pay. You give it to the province. Does this apply both to grade R and to those that are below 4?
I mean, grade R.
So if I have grade R, there are those two. Let's go to this one. I'm trying to clear my mind of this new. I've been under the impression that once you are below 5, you are not the responsibility of the department. You are total development. We are saying now from 0 to 4, for those practitioners, they are paid the stipend by the department. Am I correct?
We're responsible for training those practitioners.
That's for training.
So while they're training, we give them a stipend. But the funding for their salary comes through the subsidy from the social development. So the salaries are from social development, training cycling.
Again, I'm trying to clear my mind again. The whole process of this ECD, we're not putting on the, that bill there. I think in particular state, it should be the survival of the fittest. If you are rich, you put your money there. And now we're saying almost everybody should be able to. The below R, can I take it there that is still the survival of the fittest?
No, Chair, because the subsidy from social development should be sufficient to pay for that ECD facilitator. So, as I say, while they're in training, we will give them a stipend, but then when they return to the centre, they would use the subsidy provided to the centre to cover the cost of that educator. So, no, there's equally a good chance of ECD, the 024 is being provided.
Maybe let me call this training too. I'm this practitioner and this 025.
Yeah, it's 024. Yeah.
When I'm being trained, does that mean I move away from my base to some place or I'm still there getting twice now? My school is paying me what it used to pay, but the department is also paying. Or is this a bursary for me to get the training? I'm trying to clear this.
Because it's part of the expanded public works program, when a practitioner is in training, the training is free of charge, so that is, similar to a bursary. It's on site training, and secondly, they receive a stipend. The stipend is governed by the level of qualification that they are working towards. So if it's level 1 qualification, they get 500 rand. If it's level 4 qualification, they'll receive 1,000 rand. Stipend per month,